Tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about the middle way, which is a helpful frame in many different aspects of trying to understand meditation practice. Tonight I'll look at it in a particular way, around some notions that seem to float around about accepting things, changing things, passivity, activity. There are some things that easily become dichotomies, and we tend to slip off one way or the other, or zigzag. And so I'd like to reflect a little bit on certain aspects of this, especially in terms of meditation. There was an email dialogue that went on between two American scholar teachers of Buddhism, one with a Tibetan orientation, the same school as the Dalai Lama, and another one with a Theravada kind of mainstream Sri Lankan orientation. And they're both very good people and excellent scholars, and it was initiated by the Tibetan teacher who was concerned that some of the notions circulating about mindfulness in this country are not well grounded in Buddhist teaching and were thus kind of floating off in a overly nebulous direction. And he was particularly concerned with a notion of bare attention. And so he corresponded with the Theravada scholar, who in the end convinced the Tibetan teacher that the original notion of mindfulness does involve something like bare attention. However, that's not the only meaning of mindfulness. Mindfulness is richer than that. But as they went back and forth in this discussion, which was edited and then circulated as a file to a certain group of friends, which is how I got a hold of it, the one area where they agreed is that there's some fuzzy ideas about accepting things, or even more crudely, accepting everything. And the Theravada scholar mentioned when he was once at a leading meditation center, there was a sign that said something like, whatever arises is okay. Something like that. And people talk about radical acceptance and things like this. Now these two notions I've just mentioned are not necessarily wrong. However, they can be misunderstood, taken out of context, or clung to so that they no longer are the middle way and start going off to an extreme. And this is what I'd like to talk about a bit. So the notion that whatever arises is okay, what's that about? And accepting everything, is that the Buddha's teaching? I would say, as these two scholars also pointed out, that these ideas may be as much connected with current trends in Western psychology and psychotherapy as they may be more connected in that way than they are with the Buddha's teaching. That doesn't validate or invalidate them. But for those of us who are concerned that Buddha's teachings be represented correctly, it has some importance. And I'll leave aside their discussion and now speak for myself. But I did want to raise that this is a concern that's going on. So what is it to just be mindful of whatever arises and accept it, and that whatever it is, it's okay? Is this good practice? One angle on this is that I think such notions, and by the way, the phrasing I'm using, which is my best memory of what was in that email correspondence, might be a caricature of what certain teachers, certain Vipassana teachers are saying. Since I've never done a retreat with those teachers, I don't know their teaching all that well. So this notion of whatever arises, it's okay, accept it all. If I don't know who, if anyone, is actually saying that. But it does seem that people who go off on retreats in Vipassana centers pick up ideas like this, and that's what I hear of in various ways. It seems that these notions are a response, and probably in some ways a valid response, to a tendency of practically everybody that when certain things start happening in our bodies, like our legs going stiff or our knees aching or our backs getting sore, or certain things going on with our thoughts, like them wandering all over the place or getting very negative or judgmental, or our emotions, like a lot of worrying, anxiety or anger or depression and sorrow, that when certain things start happening, most of us want to change things. We live in a very success-oriented, competitive society. And it seems a lot of people who end up meditating are struggling with the social conditioning that, you know, we're trying to monitor what's right, what's wrong, how to be better, how to prove, how to win friends and influence people, how to be successful. And that's deeply ingrained in most of us, perhaps all of us. So when certain things happen, like pain in the legs, or the mind just keeps racing and busily spinning and thinking, well, that's not why we meditate, is it? You know, it's easy to reach the conclusion that that shouldn't be happening. I should do something about it. The problem with that is, one, that doing something about it could be just the habits of our conditioning that I've just mentioned. It could be aversion. You know, we just don't like whatever's happening. The pain is uncomfortable. All those busy thoughts are driving me crazy. Worry or irritation are uncomfortable. We don't like these things, so we want to get rid of them. That's not the best motivation. And more significantly, especially when we're relatively new to meditation, which may go on for years, there may be something unpleasant happening But do we really understand what's happening? How it came to happen? What's fueling it? What's perpetuating it? And do we really know, in a wise, skillful way, how to do something about it? I would say, for the most part, no. And so when we do something, it's pretty much reaction. So this is what I think, to the degree it's accurate, that whatever arises is okay, accept it, just watch it, be mindful, no judgment. I think that that's what, where that, these perspectives come from. They're to counteract some deeply ingrained tendencies. So, in a certain cultural way, that teaching has value. In certain contexts, it's probably appropriate. But if I'm correct, there's also a danger, which is when there's an imbalance in individuals or groups or a culture, and then we counteract it in a certain way, and then forget that this is to correct an imbalance. Then if we get too far over on this side, we've just flopped to another imbalance. And this happens in different ways, probably in any cultural context or with anybody's personality stuff. You find something that's too far that way, well, maybe you try to correct it over that way. But if one then turns that into a new standard, it's no longer the middle way. That's why I think these two scholars were picking up on this point. Because in classic Buddhist teachings, both Theravada and Tibetan, there's stuff that you don't just accept it. At least if, and here it boils down partly to what we mean by acceptance. A lot of people seem to take acceptance to be almost apathy, where however things have been or are right now, we just accept them and we let them continue. That's not, I think, what the Buddha means. And so I think that's one of the danger in these, in talking about acceptance. People give a misunderstanding. They take that word in a way that the Buddha, or I would say a wise meditator, would not take the word acceptance to mean. I'll give some examples, if I can, to flesh this out a bit. We can start with the breathing. When you first sit down to meditate, and when you're new to breath meditation, and up until you have a pretty good experiential understanding of the breath, when different things are happening with the breath, you may find some of them uncomfortable, but you or we probably don't have a skillful way to do anything about it. Many people's breath is short or shallow, too fast, and a little bit tight and agitated. That's pretty common with our busy lifestyles. And some of you have heard me bring this up many, many times. So if we notice that and then immediately try to change it, most people will simply control the breath and try to force it to slow down or be deeper or something, until they realize that that just perpetuates the problem. Because the shallow, stressful, hurried breathing is a product of lifestyle, of not knowing how to center and relax, and of having most of our life be ego-driven. And that will just, when we try to change the breath consciously, those patterns will probably keep sneaking in. So there's an appropriate time and place for just let it be, accept it how it is. However, over time, when you start to get clear, certain breath patterns are unhealthy. There's ways of breathing that, for example, reinforce anxiety or anger or restlessness. When we're clear enough about that, we then begin to be able to do something about it in a non-aggressive, non-invasive way, which isn't about just grabbing control and willfully changing it. So when one has enough understanding of the breath, one is able to gradually let it relax, slow down, and deepen without going back to crude ego control or egoistic control of the breath. So there's a role for just paying attention and being aware, not trying to change anything. But when there's enough mindfulness and understanding, there are more subtle ways to do something. And for me, this is a doing which is not a kind of passive acceptance, nor is it an aggressive doing, but it's finding a middle way where it's not so willful or driven or forced, but it's in a certain way active. And in the Buddha's teaching, there's an emphasis on effort and on being active. And I think in our culture we too often see active and passive as a duality. But I would put it active or passive and aggressive is the duality. And there's a balanced activeness that's in the middle. Passivity is actually egoistic. There's a somebody who's not doing anything, just going along, afraid to do anything, being sort of fuzzy or lazy or sloppy. And aggression is also egoistic. So what the kind of activeness that the Buddha advocated is something much less egoistic, although ego will keep slipping or sneaking in. So that's one example to sort of flesh out this point I'm exploring. Another would be with thinking. Again, it's common that when we meditate, the mind gets busy, it's worried about something, it's planning. And if you try to stop that without knowing how to do it, it usually just builds a lot of frustration and tension. So again, there's a certain appropriateness, especially for beginners, to say, you know, just relax, just let it be, accept it, don't fight it, don't react. That's good advice for a while. But then at a point, it's obvious that certain patterns of thought are doing us no good whatsoever. And simply watching them go on and on and on and on is stupid. It's foolish. Now, I'm not sure there are many teachers out there advocating such a thing. And the Buddha clearly did not. And similarly, in later Tibetan teachings, there are various tools for mind training. In early Buddhism, the standard framework is skillful and unskillful. You pay attention enough to recognize, is this skillful or unskillful? And if a way of thinking is unskillful, unhealthy, if it's just recreating or perpetuating suffering, emotional imbalance, prejudice, fear, hatred, confusion, one ought to actively abandon such thinking. This perspective is well grounded in the early teachings. However, it seems that some meditators in America have difficulty with such a notion. I often hear people expressing fear that would be judgmental. You know, you're not supposed to judge things as right and wrong, good or bad. But that's not the point here. The point is, if something's unhealthy, why let it continue? It strikes me as amusing when people ask this, because most of the same people are on retreats where they serve very tasty food. You know, you don't see them volunteering to eat lousy food. They tend to expect good food and comfortable accommodations. And somehow they don't see the contradiction between that and just letting some unwholesome thinking go on. The same people, if they got sick, I would hope would do something responsible to heal the illness. And I think most of them would. I have heard of people who get kind of muddle-headed and, oh, I'll just accept this pain and I won't do anything about it. And although deep down they're hoping it'll go away. Most of the time, when it's in certain areas of our life, if something's clearly painful, unhealthy, causing trouble, we try to find a way to deal with it. And so it strikes me as amusing when it comes to meditation, no, we shouldn't be judgmental. Anyway, the Buddha's teaching isn't about being judgmental, it's about recognizing. Anger has unhealthy consequences, as does fear. Obsessing about some criticism that somebody made towards us, or repeatedly comparing how I'm doing with how somebody else is doing, seeking approval, planning some activity we're doing tomorrow or next week over and over and over again. All of these have unhealthy consequences. And when we see that clearly enough, we might as well find a way to disengage and free ourselves from some thinking that's chugging along in an unhealthy way. And the various schools of Buddhism have a rich corpus of teachings to help us do that. And I would hope that those teachings are being made available in the places that talk about acceptance and everything's okay. Because at some point, things aren't okay. You know, on some idealistic level, sure, everything's okay. But when your mind's doing something not okay, just pretending it's okay is muddle-headed. And that's not wisdom. I'll give one more example, although I kind of morphed over into it already, which is, in addition to patterns of thought, emotional stuff. You know, sure, when we start to feel fear, it's often skillful to just sit with the fear for a while. Because usually we try to repress or avoid uncomfortable emotions and therefore never see them very clearly, never develop a deeper understanding. So to sit with it in a kind of accepting but stable way is usually a good practice. But after a while, if the fear's still there, something's missing. To accept something like fear over and over and over again is not sufficient. And that's what the scholars were getting at as well. One has to look more deeply into, you don't just accept it, but there's an active investigation. Where does this come from? And that can be done meditatively. It can also be done by a more analytical, reflective process. And that's helped by good study. So we can avail ourselves of the useful teachings, including valuable perspectives from modern psychology. But we don't just do that just to kind of, fear's okay, anger's okay. The point of Buddhist practice is to be increasingly free of such stuff. Acceptance has its place, but there's a point where, if the acceptance is too passive, it's not going to change much. So acceptance for the sake of going deeper into it, inquiring deeper into the root causes, so that then we can find a way to let go of it. If that's not happening, Buddhism also teaches how to antidote something. Courage is an antidote for fear. Faith can also help with fear. Loving kindness and forgiveness are good antidotes for anger. There are antidotes for envy, for boredom. And one should be, if one's a serious meditator, one learns to be skillful in antidoting emotional states and the kind of thinking that perpetuates them. To do that, we usually need some ability to just accept. But I don't think that's the end point. That kind of acceptance is more of a starting point. So those are some thoughts that I hope are useful.